Check of the runners, the 1-0. Nooney swings it, drives one to left, high and deep by the wall. Gone! Three-run pitch homer, Eduardo Nunez. Can you believe it? And the Red Sox lead it 8-4.
I can believe it. That guy can hit home runs. It's not that hard to believe. He's a baseball player paid millions of dollars to hit the ball. It's not that hard to believe at all, really. But he hits a three-run homer, and that gave the breathing room that the Red Sox needed last night. It turned a 5-4 game into an 8-4 game. Red Sox win game one of the World Series against the Dodgers. Here's Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, on the loss. He had his ace on the hill, Kershaw, and Kershaw didn't have his best stuff.
I thought offensively we had a great game plan, and I thought to get Sale's pitch count up and to get him out of there, to get to their pen, I thought we did a great job offensively. We really did. It was just, again, the defense, uncharacteristic tonight from our club. And I don't think the pitching line is reflective of the way the guys threw. You know, to beat a club like that, you got to play a cleaner game defensively.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora on his offense putting up 8 runs last night.
Put some good at-bats, a lot of good at-bats together from the first at-bat, and we put pressure on them. That's what we do. We stay off the edges of the strike zone. We attack pitches in the middle of the zone, and we did an outstanding job offensively.
Game two is tonight on Fox. It's David Price. We'll see if he can follow up his fantastic performance last time out, his only postseason win as a starter in his career. And he will take on Rio, the pitcher of record for the Dodgers, who was great in the ALDS or NLDS, but not in the NLCS. Game two tonight in Boston. Red Sox up 1-0. All right, local sports. We've got state cross country coming up this weekend. We've got state volleyball Friday and possibly Saturday. We've got locker room chats today and tomorrow. We've got football playoff games tomorrow and Friday. And with that, I catch my breath and hand it over to Dusty.
Yes, and you can state cross country, all the qualifiers that made it from this weekend, you can read all about that at ncksports.com. 1A state will be in Wamego, and then 3A runners will be in Lawrence coming up there on Saturday. So, again, that's cross country, what's going on there. As mentioned, football and volleyball, state volleyball coming up on Friday, as we'll have coverage on Kitty Country 94 and Z96.3. Lady Blue Jays of St. John's Tipton playing at the 1A state tournament, Wide Auditorium in Emporia, as we'll have our pre-match coverage starting at 9:45. The first match for the Lady Jays is at 10 o'clock against Mound Ridge. Then they'll play at noon against South Gray and 3 o'clock against Spearville. And again, you can hear those on Kitty Country 94, and they're all online at kittycountry94.com as well. And then Smith Center will be competing in the 2A state volleyball tournament. They'll start at the same time there in Hayes at Gross Memorial Coliseum. And their pool play matches and everything, you can see that at ncksports.com as well. And then in the afternoon, we'll have the Boyette Lady Trojans at 3A state volleyball in Hutch on Friday. Z96 through the lake and kittycountry94.com. 4:30, they play Belle Plaine, at 6:30 Frontenac, and at 8:30 Silver Lake. So as Wade said, if they make it to Saturday, we'll cover those matches for St. John's, Tipton, and Boyette as well on Kitty Country 94. So that's a look at volleyball coming up here on Friday. Thursday, have the football games and playoff games on Z96 through the lake, Donovan West at Rock Hills. Pregame 5:30, kickoff at 6 o'clock. And on Kitty Country 94, it's Tri-Plains Brewster at Osborne. Same times, pregame at 5:30 and kickoff at 6, as both of those games can also be heard online at kittycountry94.com. Then coming up on Friday at Hugoton, the Boyette Trojans are playing in the 3A playoffs. First round, pregame 5:30, kickoff 6 o'clock. Kitty Country 94, kittycountry94.com, and live video stream at ncksports.com. So that's the competition that we have on our stations coming up here at the end of the week. And as Wade mentioned, we also have high school football locker room chats. Those will get underway this evening as we'll talk with head coaches Boyette, Osborne, Smith Center, Lincoln, and Thunder Ridge. Around 5:10, shortly after that tonight, we'll have our high school football locker room chats. Then coming up tomorrow, our high school locker room chats will all be, you have to get them online on our podcast. We'll post them and plenty of time for you to go listen to them before our pregame coverage starts, hopefully. And you can listen to those ahead of games that are starting at 6 o'clock if you'd like to at kittycountry94.com on our podcast for our Thursday locker room chats with St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas coaches coming up tomorrow.
All right. Did you mention Smith Center's volleyball?
I did.
Matches?
Yep.
Okay, covered that. Smith Center, it seems like they're at state every single year. They're out at Hayes this year, number two seed at 35-5. And we were talking about the long road trips. You get to go to Emporia from Mankato. I got to go to Hugoton. And the Burks family has to go all the way to Hugoton. And then after the game, drive all the way to Lawrence in time for state cross country to start at 10:35 in the morning So all they're going to do is drive 4.5 hours to Hugoton, six and a half hours to Lawrence, and then eventually come back to Beloit.
Let's hit every corner of the state.
Well, I think they should go
as little time as we can.
Yeah, you know, they're kind of leaving out. You need to go to St. Francis and to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
They need to do that
from
next
Lawrence
weekend.
To St. Francis and then go down to Pittsburgh.
They like
to
travel. They've gone to all 50 states. They have, like, they do every year they do a trip and go to so many states every year, and they finally got, I think, to all the continental states this past summer, Eric told me. But now what he needs to do is you went catty corner, basically, here. This weekend, what you're going to do, and then next weekend, just go to St. Francis just for fun, and then go all the way to Pittsburgh, Kansas, and see how long it takes you.
Eric, there's 105 counties in this state. You got to hit them all.
Yeah, it's like a politician.
Yeah, you know? Well, we did some figuring earlier, too, and between Friday and by the time when they leave for Hugoton Friday and get home on Saturday, they're not quite going to hit 1,000 miles, but they're going to be close.
It's close.
They're going to be 900, give or take.
Yeah. I can see that him turn Eric turn that into the expense report there at NC State Tech.
I don't.
$1.50 a mile $1.50 a mile No, don't.
We're told him he should talk to the regents about getting him a plane.
Yeah. Or all he has to do, you know, all he has to do is call my good friend Don Hyland over here. See if he'll let him use your plane. Of course not. He won't let you use it.
Maybe Don would make a donation to the tech college.
Yeah, that's funny. any Don Hyland and donation does not go in the same sentence.
They both start with D-O-N.
Yeah, they do, but they don't go in the same sentence. I'm going to tell you that.
Well, until now, I think maybe that was the first time anybody ever said Don and donation in the same sentence.
I think so. First time for everything, right? I don't think he'll provide a plane even. Well, first of all, Don's always using it, so it won't be available for the President's NC Tech to go from Hugoton.
Maybe you could call his buddy Warren or Bill and see if they got a spare.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, yeah. Don won't do that either. Okay. So we got a lot of local sports this week, and we look forward to it. We talk about the World Series. Let's shift gears to the Chiefs for a moment, and we'll talk more about this with Matthew Derrick. You know, there are a lot of people who say the Chiefs' defense stinks, and it has stunk for the most part this year, but they have been much better at Arrowhead. Good against the Jaguars, who is not a great offensive team, as we found out later on. Very good against the Bengals, Sunday night primetime. And I hear this, well, we got to trade for Patrick Peterson, which I don't think we have to trade for Patrick Peterson. But, you know, if he's available, which the Cardinals are saying he's not available, we're not interested in trading him. Peterson wants traded. The Cardinals say we're not trading him. So we shall see. But the Chiefs don't have to make some big deal to improve this defense. The answers are within, based on a couple of things. The Chiefs' defense will get better, in my opinion, two ways. One, guys get healthy. You get Justin Houston back if, and that's a big if, you get Eric Berry back, and you're going to get Daniel Sorensen back. That automatically makes your defense, at least on paper, better. So that's three starters you're missing out of 11. That's pretty significant. You get those guys healthy, that changes your defense and should be better. And if it's just slightly better, that might be the difference between losing in division round of the playoffs and making a Super Bowl. Now, the other reason the Chiefs' defense can improve is playing young guys a little bit more that are athletic. Dorian O'Daniel is a guy I've been wondering why he hasn't been playing. And Terrence Smith messed up his knee Sunday night, and he is a linebacker that comes in, athletic, that can run, in place of Reggie Ragland in passing situations. And he left, got hurt. And so O'Daniel had to come in, and he looked good in the short time that he played. He's a thumper, and he's got tremendous athleticism and speed, and all he did was make plays at Clemson. And Clemson played against some of the best competition, of course, in the country, and, of course, won a national championship over Alabama. He was a part of that team, was O'Daniel, for Clemson. So, and Speak seems to be getting better, although he's not a pass-rushing specialist. He is getting better. And you got O'Daniel, and you've got Naughty, who is now starting for the most part at defensive tackle, and he's a good run stopper. He doesn't get to the quarterback, but he helps against the run. If you get these guys to get more experience, these young guys get more and more snaps, they should only get better. So you got a mixture of youth along with experience, especially when Sorensen and Berry, if or when they, along with Houston, come back. The chances of the Chiefs defense to improve from last in the league to 15th, not going to happen. But if this Chiefs defense can go from last in the league to 25th, I think that's doable. And it depends on how you rank the defenses. Are you ranking them by yardage allowed, or are you ranking them by points allowed? There's so many different categories you can claim your last or first or whatever. But to me, the points is the big one, of course. And that's what Bob Sutton says. And he's a genius. So who is going to argue with Bob Sutton?
Nobody.
But those are two areas the Chiefs can really improve. Just get healthy and also get younger guys some reps that are very athletic, more athletic than some of those veterans that they have.
Yeah, I loved the Dorian O'Daniel pick when they made it. And because I watched probably more Clemson than any other outside of the Big 12 over the last few years. I've watched Clemson a lot for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I loved the pick, and I thought it was a value pick when they got him, too. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was excited to see him in the game on Sunday. And then to see what he did was even more exciting for what I'm seeing for what could be the future of Dorian O'Daniel with the Chiefs, you know. And you're right. I mean, it's guys like that. And then you're wondering, well, why wasn't he playing more, like you said? Like, why wasn't he playing already? But he's a rookie, you know, and he's a young guy. And you just don't know what you're going to get out of those guys here early in their careers. So I'm guessing he was low on the depth chart because of that, because they had experience ahead of him. But, yeah, some of these young guys, if they can get in there and get their shot – that could, like you said, it could change from being last to 25th, and that's all you need.
That's significant.
I mean, with this offense that you've got, that's really all you need. And like you said, if you give up the yards and hold them to low points, doesn't really matter what you're technically ranked defensively in the league.
Right. The only problem with that is you give up lots of yards and even a lot of field goals. Your offense is on the sideline a lot during that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the bottom line. You should be judged as points allowed. And the Chiefs have more injuries. Jordan Debbie, which all these people online are like, I did Debbie. He didn't even leave the game. He wasn't even hurt. How's he on IR? He's the center who replaced Mitch Morse, who has a concussion. Well, I was at the game, and I saw him grabbing his arm when he left the field one time, and I thought, oh, no, if he gets hurt, what are we going to do? We're on a third-string center. Well, guess what? He's hurt so bad that he is out for the season. He's been placed on IR.
Yeah.
Terrence Smith is on IR. He's out for the season. That means O'Daniel's got to step up. You got to hope Mitch Morse gets cleared so he can play.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you got a third-string center. Although Cam Irving can play some center, but then you got to move and shuffle everything on the offensive line, which leads you to the question I'm going to ask Matthew Derrick. Is the offensive line really that important? The Chiefs had a backup center and a backup right guard, and they didn't skip a beat against the Bengals. So, you know, I've heard this, you build a team from the trenches. You got to win the game. You got to win the game in the trenches. Well, you can win the game in the trenches, but if you don't have a good quarterback or any skill position players, you're not going to be that good. But if you have an outstanding quarterback and outstanding skill position players, you can still be very, very successful with an average offensive line. But if you have a great offensive line with average players behind it, probably not as successful. I mean, look at Barry Sanders, for crying out loud. He didn't have a great offensive line.
He didn't even have a good offensive line.
Right, and he was able to do what he did. Okay, and then you got Emmitt Smith, who had a great offensive line. You saw what he did. I mean, if you would have flipped those two players, I think Emmitt's career would have been a lot less and Barry's would have been a lot more.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect example of it. So I think you look, if you're going to – the Chiefs have had good, really great offensive lines, Willie Rofe, Will Shields, and they've had great defenses certain years and then bad offenses. They've had great offenses, bad defenses. But the key is they haven't, and we talked about it, they don't have a franchise quarterback. Now they finally have that. And then you put together these great skill position players. You can patchwork a line together. The Patriots have done it for years.
Oh, yeah.
And they win Super Bowls because they protect Tom Brady, even with guys you've never heard of. You don't see an offensive line with a whole bunch of first-round draft picks on it. And you look at two teams that spent a lot of money on offensive linemen and built from the offensive line backwards, and look where they are right now. The Raiders spent a ton of money on offensive line, overspent for Hudson, who used to be the center for the Chiefs. Chiefs let him go, which was smart.
Yeah.
And the Raiders paid a whole bunch of money for him and the right tackle and Donald Penn, a left tackle. And then the Cowboys spent a ton of money on the offensive line. Where are those two teams right now?
Not in a very good position.
Not in a very good position. And also, what have they won during that time when the offensive lines were great? When those guys played great, okay, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys were 13-3. What did they win? They lost the first round of the playoffs to the Packers. The Raiders have made the playoffs and lost in the first round. The Raiders and Cowboys spent a ton of money on the offensive lines, and they haven't even come close to sniffing the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs had a great offensive line back in the day, and they didn't come really close to sniffing the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you gotta build from the skill position players and then work inward. You can find a sixth round draft pick to put on offensive line. You can find undrafted guys to play offensive line.
Yeah. Now, the Chiefs got lucky with the success on their offensive line that they had guys like you said, Will Shields and Brian Waters, guys like that that they had in-house already. You know, I know they went and got Willie Rofe to add to that offensive line, but they didn't have to pay a lot of money outside of free agency to build that line.
Waters was like, wasn't Brad Waters like a fourth or fifth round pick? He was not a high pick.
No, he wasn't.
He was a Pro Bowler.
He spent
Will Shields wasn't however he a first many, round pick.
He was a high pick for sure.
Yeah,
out of Nebraska, so. But yeah. But second, the thought. Point is they had those guys. You know, they didn't have to go sign a Rodney Hudson and overspend for him. And I don't know if they overspent for Willie Rofe when they signed him or not. But he obviously was a nice addition. But
third round.
Brian Waters was an undrafted free agent.
Okay.
Will Shields was a third round
pick. Will Shields was a third round pick, and Brian Waters was undrafted.
Yeah.
Now, so, Willie Rofe was a first round pick.
Yeah.
But that tells you right there, you can have great players, and they turned a great offensive lineman, and they weren't even drafted, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Whereas, how many great quarterbacks and super awesome wide receivers and running backs are undrafted? Running backs happens more often than receivers or quarterbacks. Yeah. Can you think of the last great quarterback that was undrafted? It'd be Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
That'd be about it.
Yeah. It's a lot of these guys that were blocking. We're blocking for an undrafted running back.
Priest Holmes, yeah. Undrafted
so,
running back, right?
You know, you'll see that more with them.
Jamal Charles, third round pick.
Yeah.
You get value for running backs and offensive line later in the draft, but for really good receivers and quarterbacks, you usually got to get them high.
Yeah, it's like the Giants drafted Saquon Barkley number two. You know, yes. What are they getting out of that?
Right.
You know, it's like,
well, he's a good player.
Yeah, he is. But you know, how's he helping the whole team at this point in time?
And when they run quarterback sneaks instead of running Barkley, he's helping them not be worse than they are.
They've got to build around that, obviously. But right. Yeah, I mean, you can find an offensive line. That's the point.
I didn't realize Willie Rofe and Will Shields came out of the same draft.
Yeah. Bronco quarterback in trouble with the law. We'll get to Matthew Derrick here in a little
Speaking
bit.
Speaking of undrafted.
Chad Kelly. Well, the Broncos and the fans were hoping that Chad Kelly would be in the starting lineup, but Case Keenum played well, and the Broncos won last Thursday against the Cardinals. A very bizarre situation. They believe it involves Von Miller's Halloween party. Not that Von Miller is at fault here. If you're willing to connect the dots, the circumstances are just weird. According to police documents, Kelly apparently dressed as a cowboy.
It was a cowboy theme party.
Was he a Dallas cowboy? Yeah. Kelly apparently dressed as a cowboy, stumbled into someone's house, sat down on their couch, mumbled incoherently, and then got hit with a vacuum tube a bunch. What? And if you look at his mugshot, he's got a smile like he doesn't even like, hey, dude, I look cognizant.
Looked like he came from a party.
Yeah. Well, it kind of, but I don't know. But anyway, it's weird. And he's been charged with criminal trespassing, first degree charge, and reports are John Elway is livid and that he is very seriously considering letting Chad Kelly go. He is that upset about this situation.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
Yeah.
moving on, was the Huskers win Saturday a turning point? Because you look at the Nebraska, they put up all these yards and all these points offensively throughout the year. Now, they've had some costly turnovers, the defense hasn't been great, and they had some really dumb penalties. That's really what's hurt them. But statistically, Nebraska football is an abnormality. They should be 3-3 or 4-2 based on the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So we sit here and we go, everybody makes fun of Nebraska because it's easy to pile on because Nebraska's never been this bad before. So you got Sooner fans, K-State fans, KU fans piling on, having fun, joking. And I agree, enjoy it while you can because Nebraska's going to be good. And I think they'll be good next year. I think they're going to be a lot better next year.
Oh, yeah.
But you think about this Nebraska season. If they actually, first of all, they got a horrible break when their game got canceled against Akron. So they would have won that game. So then Akron, you're 1-0. And then you would have had a game under your belt with confidence playing Colorado, who Colorado had a game played before they went to Nebraska, and Nebraska barely lost that game. Puts up tons of yards, but lost by 5. I would argue that if they played the game against Akron, they odds are going to win that one. And then Frost gets his win, and that's out of the way. There's no stress and pressure there, and everybody's all giddy. There's a whole bunch of momentum and confidence. You go and you beat Colorado, which, you know, I mean, Colorado's a decent team, 5-1 on the year. I don't know what they did this past weekend.
They lost. They're 5-2.
So they're 5-2, yeah. But they're playing some good teams now, and they're starting to lose. And they barely beat Nebraska, but they had a game under their belt. Nebraska wins that. They're 2-0, and then the season's completely different. Because then you have some confidence, and you might not lose to Northwestern, a game that you should have won. I mean, you look at it, they should have beat Colorado. They should have beat Northwestern. Akron they would have had, which they're going to get that back by playing Bethune-Cookman this week to make up for that game. Nebraska very, very, very easily could be 4-3. Very easily. They're not that far away. I think people that don't watch Nebraska football just immediately go, well, the Huskers stink. They're horrible. They're 0-6. They're brutal. They must be really bad. But if you really watch them play football, one, they're fun to watch. Offensively, they have a freshman, true freshman quarterback. He is fantastic. Got outstanding running backs. They got an outstanding receiver in Spielman. Mm-hmm. And they're like a poor man's Chiefs offense with not a great defense, but the difference is they make a ton more mistakes, and their quarterback, of course, is extremely young, makes some mistakes at times. But Nebraska isn't that far away from being a very good team. I'm not saying a Big Ten championship contender right now. I'm saying being a very good team to where they could be a 7 or 8 win team. They're not that far away. And once Frost gets rid of the stuff he doesn't want there, which is going to happen, he's going to filter it out, bring in his own recruits. You better enjoy. You're right. If you're not a Husker fan and you're piling on right now, you better live it up and enjoy it, because it's not going to last a long time.
No. Well, and they had to play three of those games with a walk-on quarterback that wasn't.
They wouldn't have lost to Troy if they had Martinez.
No.
They had a walk-on quarterback because Gibbia transferred. There was another bad break.
Exactly.
If he would have been healthy and or would have stayed and Martinez was hurt, then you would have had him playing against Troy and you probably would have won that game. So there it is, 4-3 right there. Maybe 5-2.
Yeah.
They're not that far away. But people don't know much about the Huskers, just think they're horrible. Well, enjoy it while you can, because it's not going to last. Bethune-Cookman, Nebraska, home at 11 a.m. And last thing, that TCU game for KU and K-State looks a little bit more winnable now. TCU wide receiver Kevontae Turpin dismissed from the team following arrest on assault charge. He has been kicked out the team, arrested Sunday for assault and charged with bodily injury of a family member. And here's the thing. He also was arrested back in March for battery of that same household member. But TCU wasn't really aware of all of the details about that, although I think it'd be interesting for people looking at that a little bit more. Maybe TCU didn't want to know. I don't know. But that's not a good
thing.
They thought it was resolved, but they probably didn't care if it was, as long as they were told it was resolved, so he could play football. But I give Gary Patterson credit. Don't let him hang around. Just kick him off and end that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it was Baylor, he'd still be on the team.